Bienvenue, welcome. John says shepherd, the elastics and shepherding people here. As I said, Paul, bienvenue and welcome everyone here this evening. So I'd just like to start with land acknowledgements. We acknowledge that Ottawa is located on the traditional and unceded territory of the Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation. We extend our respects to all First Nations, Inuit, Métis peoples for their valuable past and present contributions to the land. So with that, I'm going to welcome on stage Ambassador John Concannon. Thank you very much.
Jenny, our new Deputy Admissions, her first official piece of work here at the Embassy. Give it up for Jenny! I know, it's fantastic. Now, the first thing we're going to do is ask a young lady from not too far away in Kingston who sang the anthems for Prime Minister Mark Carney, and we thought it was so good, we're going to bring her back tonight to sing the anthems with Minister Richmond. And could you please give it up for Ciara Earle, who's award-winning Cork International Choral Festival singer all the way from Ottawa via Cork here with us tonight. Thank you.
Sheena Pina Pa A Topi Ale Gerin Winda Su Ha Tinderon In Hui Fei Boi Beser Shantira Shin Shepa
She love of Nabila Sholi Kani Ola Nabi. Oh Canada, our home and native land, true patriot love.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Ciara. So, welcome to the Diaspora, Ireland's Diaspora Strategy Launch, the Global Ireland Diaspora Strategy Launch. And it's a very special event. And we wanted to invite, and we're very honoured to have our guest of honour, the Minister who's come all the way from Ireland, Minister Neil Richmond, who heads up our Diaspora Strategy all over the world, and our International Development Strategy, so he's incredibly busy travelling, representing Ireland. But we wanted, as well as Minister Richmond, to have a representative of Canada who would be somebody of our diaspora. So we were absolutely honoured to have the Speaker of the House, Speaker Scarpa Leggia, whose grandmother left County Clare and has come here. And I was lucky enough to be asked, with some of you as well from Montreal, at, I see Gabe, I think you were there as well, and we were there as well, Greg and Laurie, at the St. Patrick's Day event, where the Speaker spoke about the importance and power of parliamentary democracy and a standing ovation, incredible speech. So we're going to ask the speaker to speak. But before we do, a lot of you have heard us talk about the Canada-Ireland 180 years since all this big movement of refugees, and we were the refugees, and Canada was there for us, and we'll never forget it. And now we've got the Prime Minister coming over next week. So we've just prepared a little video, just to give you a sense of what that is, and Angus, just to give you a feeling of what that video is, just before we ask the speaker to come up. And this is something that we're going to when the Prime Minister comes to Dublin next week, we will share. And Angus is just putting it together there. And in case he hasn't known, by the way, the Prime Minister...
...1847. One of the darkest chapters in Irish history. 1 million dead. 1 million forced to flee. Nothing left but the sea. But Canada, from its early settlers to Indigenous peoples, opened its arms in an extraordinary act of compassion and humanity. But the Irish who came didn't just survive in Canada, they helped build it. In every province, every territory, in the fields and in the cities, in the classrooms, the courtrooms and the concert halls. Today, 1 in 5 Canadians has Irish heritage, Irish blood, Irish heart, Irish passion. 6 Prime Ministers have Irish roots, including Prime Minister Mark Carney. The connection runs deep. Ireland is now Canada's 10th biggest investor, while 8 of Canada's top 10 companies choose Ireland as their European home. And we're just getting started. In 2027, Canada-Ireland 180 marks a year of remembrance, reflection and renewal, with a program of events celebrating the cultural, historic and diplomatic ties between our nations. Ireland and Canada, shoulder to shoulder, our story is not behind us, it's what we build next. Canada-Ireland 180, remember, reflect, reimagine.
Thank you. Everybody, we'd love to hear your ideas for Canada-Ireland 180. We heard a great one already from the Minister. Some people were giving him some good ideas. But before we come to that, it gives a great honour to welcome the Speaker of the House of Parliament of Canada to the stage, Gurmila Morgan.
Thank you very much, Ambassador, and thank you for inviting me to this special evening, my wife Jan and I, to take part in this special evening and to meet Minister Richmond and to be here for the launch of the diaspora strategy. As you all know, the Ambassador has an encyclopedic knowledge of the Irish influence on this country. And that knowledge includes the fact, which I had long ago forgotten, that the Toronto Maple Leafs were once originally called the Toronto St. Pats, which leads me to wonder if that unfortunate name change is not the real source of the curse the Leafs have been living under all these years, similar to the curse of the Bambino, which plagued the Boston Red Sox for so long. The hockey season is, to all intents and purposes, over for us Canadians, and we turn our attention now to the World Cup. And in fact, our two countries, Canada and Ireland, played each other last week in a friendly pre-tournament match in Montreal, the city where the Irish diaspora first took hold in Canada. And how fitting, I would say, how pitch perfect that the game ended in a tie between old friends. I'm proud to call myself a member of the Irish diaspora. Now, with a not very Irish-sounding surname, it's been a bit of a struggle to convince others that I'm worthy of membership in the Irish-Canadian family. But the thing about the Irish in Canada is we're everywhere. On the surface, with names like O'Brien, O'Neill, Phelan, Sheehan, Maloney, but also just a little below the surface where a name might not tell the full story. My maternal grandmother, Ellen Connell, came to Canada alone at the age of 17 from County Clare at the turn of the 20th century. She met and married Joseph Louis Doucette, not an uncommon story in the history of the union between the Irish and the French in Quebec. Although carrying a French last name as the daughter of a French-Canadian father, my mother always had a strong attachment to her Irish heritage. And like all good Irish, she was a bit of a rebel. She would in fact run afoul of the law once a year when she would buy a ticket to the Irish sweepstakes at a time when the lotteries in Canada were still illegal. According to the 2021 census, 11% of Canada's population and 5% of Quebec's population report Irish ancestry, but I know that some estimate, for Quebec at least, that the number could be as high as 40%. But being part of the Irish diaspora means more than being counted in the census. It means having a special connection to Canada's history and to the role the Irish played in revealing our national character to ourselves and then further shaping that character. As we know, the mass arrival of the Irish to this land fundamentally influenced Canada's industrial development. It was the Irish, after all, who in the 1950s helped build one of Canada's oldest and sturdiest bridges, the Victoria Bridge, which to this day carries commuters every day by road and rail between Montreal and the south shore of the St. Lawrence River. And as we know, during the building of the bridge, mass graves of Irish immigrants fleeing the Great Famine and who died of typhus on the way were discovered. But the contact between Irish famine refugees and Quebecers also revealed something fundamental about the Canadian character and our national DNA, the same DNA that over time has transformed Canada into a model and inspiration for a world trying to understand how to live together in the 21st century. We all know the story, but it bears repeating and looking at through a slightly different lens. What did welcoming thousands of sick and dying Irish reveal about bedrock Canadian values, about who we are? The Irish were welcomed with open arms by a population of a different language and culture. And even though the reigning spirit and practice of the day was one of colonialism, cultural domination, and the assimilation of the other, the French-Canadian population did not attempt to erase or supplant the culture of those arriving on its shores. Famously, as a condition for adopting newly orphaned Irish children, local families were required to commit to allowing the children to retain their Irish surnames. I know of no other case of such generosity of spirit in comparable circumstances. And we know that the French-speaking descendants of the Irish orphans have left their mark on Canada's politics. We can think of Daniel Johnson, the late Premier of Quebec, and Daniel Johnson Jr. and brother Pierre-Marc Johnson, both who also became premiers of the province, and of newspaper editor and Quebec Liberal Party leader, the late Claude Ryan. And then there are Robert Nelson, a doctor and Lower Canada Rebellion leader in the fight for responsible government, and his brother Wilfred Nelson, supporter of the Lower Canada Rebellion and also a doctor. And we should not forget English-speaking Irish Canadians who have helped build this country. The late Brian Mulroney, the late Eric Kearns, who was both the Quebec Cabinet Minister and the Federal Cabinet Minister. The Honourable Thomas Mulcair, former Quebec Environment Minister and former leader of the Federal NDP. And the Honourable Lawrence Cannon, former Conservative Cabinet Minister. Not to mention a certain contemporary federal political leader who I will not name out of a duty of neutrality as Speaker of the House of Commons. And of course, there are the prominent politicians of Irish ancestry with French surnames, Prime Minister Louis Saint-Laurent, and former Premier of Quebec Jean Charest, and also a former federal Conservative cabinet minister and party leader. Jean tells the story of growing up in the eastern townships of Quebec, where English speakers and French speakers have long lived side by side and occasionally have mixed it up in the schoolyard. One day as a young schoolboy, the bilingual Mr. Charest got into a scuffle with a French-Canadian classmate who, in the final blow of their exchange, called him English. Insult of insults. Indeed, one could not go lower or be more hurtful. Arriving home, upset at having been called English by another boy, Jean recounted the exchange to his mother, who sternly sat him down, looked him in the eye, and in a scolding manner said, "Listen here, young man, you're not English, you're Irish." Perhaps Ireland's greatest, though unintentional, gift to the Irish diaspora in Canada was to exile a young Irish revolutionary named Thomas D'Arcy McGee to the United States, where he was able to size up American democracy, and after having seen it up close, its excessive individualism, its divisions, chose to move north to help create a new and very different national experiment. McGee, of course, is most famously associated with promoting minority rights, one of this country's core values. McGee's advocacy for minority rights opened the door to our modern-day Canadian pluralism, because when you support the rights of one minority, this leads to respect for all minorities. And so ahead of his time was McGee, that even back then, over a century before the focus on reconciliation, he placed Indigenous peoples at the heart of Canadian history and insisted that they were an integral part of Canada's identity. Now, it's no secret that Canada and Ireland have much in common. We live next door to larger, more powerful neighbors, and that means we have had to rely on cultural expression as a vehicle for maintaining our national identities and sharing our distinctive values with others. And guess what? The Irish have often been at the center of Canada's cultural affirmation. To name just a few Canadian artists, past and present, with Irish roots, La Bolduc, born Mary Rose Ann Travers, often known as Quebec's first singer-songwriter, actress Geneviève Bugeaud, actor Paul Gross, filmmaker Xavier Dolan, film producer Kevin Tierney and his producer son Jacob Tierney, Émile Nelligan, French-Canadian symbolist poet considered by some to be the greatest Canadian poet in any language, and Jim Corcoran, an Anglophone singer-songwriter and broadcaster who writes and performs almost exclusively in French, and who played the role of Émile Nelligan in a well-known musical about Quebec's most famous poet. All this to say, Mr. Minister, Mr. Ambassador, the Irish diaspora is a force to be reckoned with in this country.
Wasn't that fantastic? The Speaker of the House of Parliament of Canada. It's such an honor to have the Speaker here this evening. Thank you very much, Speaker. Wonderful. And, you know, the reason we've all gathered here this evening is to launch Ireland's International Diaspora Strategy. And we're one of the few countries in the world that have a diaspora strategy. And we're one of the few countries that have a diaspora minister. And Minister Richmond, who has flown over to be here today, has traveled the world to put this strategy together. He's an incredibly passionate representative of the people of Ireland. First elected in 2009, he's held office at the local government level, he's held office at the Senate level, he's been elected twice to our Parliament, he's had multiple ministerial portfolios, and now leads Ireland's representation in two of the most important things we can do in the world, which is connect with our diaspora and our international development program. And he hasn't come on his own. He's come with Carl Gardner, who some of you will remember as a young third secretary. He hasn't got any. He's looking just as well as he did 20 years back. He's also come with Nick and Karina from his office, and John Conlon, our deputy secretary general, who's a huge supporter of everything in diaspora around the world. But could I please ask you to give a very, very special and warm welcome to the representative of the Irish people, the Minister of the Irish Government, Minister Neil Richmond. Ramila Mahogany.
Gramagat Ambassador, Gramagat Sean, ladies and gentlemen of the Inuit, Mr. Speaker. Thank you all so much for joining us here this evening. I find myself in a very precarious and indeed perhaps risky position. I have to follow an enchanting oration and delivery of both national anthems, a stunning piece of cinema prepared by an ambassador who has addressed all the key points, and then to throw into the mix, we have the Speaker of the House of Parliament delivering wonderful awards, and I'm being stared down by General John de Chastel. General, if I may be so bold, to just take a second before I get into the formalities, not just to acknowledge yourself and Marianne for being here this evening, for being good neighbours, literally, to the Irish MZ here, but for playing a role that means my children aren't growing up watching news reports of terrorist atrocities every night. Ladies and gentlemen, friends, we are living in quite interesting times, globally, internationally. And in times like this, someone said very recently in a debate in the Irish Parliament, Dáil Éireann, could we all not just be a little bit more like Canada? And I was there, that's a pretty good thing to say. And the remarks given by the speaker there brings home to us exactly the shared values that Canada has consistently put forward, from the Canada that welcomed 100,000 Irish refugees from the Great Famine in 1847, when they didn't exactly have the nation or the financial clout that they have today, from the Canada that has consistently played a leading role globally but also domestically to show that the world can be a better place. And the one thing I can only aspire to, ladies and gentlemen, at some stage in some parliament someone says, well, maybe we could be a little bit more like Ireland as well. And that is where we see ourselves in the world, looking to countries, to friends like Canada, friends across the European Union, friends who believe in Western liberal democracy, the right to play your part in the role, but crucially the responsibility to make sure it is a benevolent part that you play in the world, that you treat all citizens in your own country equally, and also with the sheer generosity of spirit that has defined a wonderful relationship that the Ambassador rightly says we will ceremonially mark next year with Canada-Ireland 180, an opportunity to reflect, as was said, not just on the events of the fateful year of 1847, but using that as a drawing spirit and a symbolic memory that we look at everything that went before, and there was a long history before, and everything that we look that came after. And I think we're doing that next year at a period where relations between Ireland and Canada, not that they've ever been bad, are perhaps the greatest they've ever been. The fact that your Prime Minister is coming over this weekend to try and give the Mayo senior footballers a deal to try and win. I think he has a better chance defining a new world order than driving Mayo towards Sam this year. But perhaps as the son of a Cavan woman, I'm just a little bit bitter that the Mayo ancestry is always prioritised above the Cavan ancestry. But that visit this weekend, where he'll be accompanied by the de Shastlins and a great friend of Ireland and James Maloney MP, chair of the Our Friends of Ireland caucus, is coming at a really, really important time, a really important time for both our countries, and a really important time for the relationship, where the Prime Minister will meet with lots of people, but particularly our Taoiseach, to see how we can build on the Taoiseach's visit to Canada last September. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, since that visit last September, well, I visited the same week, but that doesn't count. But I'm about the sixth minister that has caused John and his amazing team here quite a little bit of extra effort, because we are simply chomping at the bit to come over here. We are absolutely delighted at every opportunity to come and be part of an amazing period in Canadian-Irish bilateral relationships. And when we think about what that's been built on and what is coming ahead of us, it begins and ends, ladies and gentlemen, with the Irish abroad, the diaspora. Having the faithful responsibility to be the minister who is the voice of the Irish abroad within the Irish government is not one I take lightly. Now, most Irish constituencies have a population of about 120,000, and then you're the minister for the Irish abroad, which is officially 76 million people. And one minute it's a seniors lunch, the next it's a GA club, then it's a cultural exposition, and then there's a couple of Irish people who you don't want to talk about their roots, and there's lots of people who you do want to talk about. So it is a broad brief within governments, being one of the few countries who have had a dedicated minister for the diaspora since 2014, when Iarr Taoiseach Enda Kenny appointed Jimmy Dean, and the man who knows a thing or two about winning All Ireland's, to the first role in this position. And that's what's brought us here this evening to officially launch our diaspora strategy, the latest iteration, the third diaspora strategy, which will run from 2026 to 2030. And there is a wonderful document. I hope a few have got your hands on it, and I hope you peruse through it. Now, one thing I could do is take you through a point-by-point guide, which I really, really do want to do, but I'm appreciated it's about 40 degrees in this room, and the bar has to reopen at some stage. But crucially, this is perhaps different than a lot of times when we've talked about the diaspora. And we think about the Irish abroad and who they were and what they did. First and foremost is they never forgot their roots. They didn't run away from Ireland, maybe they were driven away, but they kept their Irishness inherently through them. And that could be people who came to Canada in the last couple of weeks, or people who are fourth, fifth, sixth generation. And Mr. Speaker, you talk about surnames and confusion. When your surname's Richmond, you kind of have to fight for it occasionally as well. Thankfully, I'm running for election in South Dublin where it's okay. But the crucial aspect of when we think about the Irish abroad and we look about the impact they've made, we talk about those who had to flee a land of famine, flee a land of persecution, both political and societal throughout the years, who simply did not have a choice. And I'm very, very lucky to be part of the generation who don't have to leave. For the first time ever, we don't have to leave. Many choose to leave when we take the opportunity, but there's always the opportunity to come back. And we're proud of every single person that has left Ireland and has gone on to make their impact upon the world. And that's why we hold our diaspora so important. For years and generations, the Irish diaspora sent back remittances that allowed people to live a semblance of life. When we were coming out of the financial crash, it was the diaspora in boardrooms across North America who maintained their investment in Ireland. Well, I'll be honest, we're not on the ask this time, thankfully, and we don't intend to be anytime soon. But rather, we see with this diaspora strategy the opportunity to continue to work together to achieve three great goals. The first, and it's the biggest responsibility of the Irish government, is the responsibility to the vulnerable. Now, the vulnerable come in many forms, many shapes. Those who have left Ireland and perhaps left Ireland under very difficult circumstances. They left a poorer Ireland, they left an Ireland where they didn't have the educational opportunities. Many of them are survivors of institutional abuse. We have, first and foremost, a responsibility to all those who find themselves in a vulnerable position. And that could be in Ottawa, it could be Toronto, or perhaps it's in Coventry or New York. And maybe it's domestic policy that's putting in a vulnerable position, but we have a responsibility to be there for them, to protect them. The second area is to harness the economic opportunities. The fact that Ireland's economy is in a position now where we work with so many partners to be the 10th largest investor in Canada. The fact that trade between Ireland and Canada has increased by 164% since 2016, and we're not done yet. So how do we harness those economic opportunities? How do we look at Irish business networks, chambers of commerce and say, well, how do we make sure that Brand Ireland is what's going to be there to help you succeed? Because in that success comes the responsibility, as I mentioned, to protect the vulnerable, but also to look at the essence of what being Irish is. Now, you can't define what being Irish is, and you certainly can't say that the Irish abroad is a homogenous group. But I think one of the things that really binds us and connects us as Irish people is that desire of connection. Where are you from? You have any relation to the... I think I know your mom. Did your brother teach me? Did I take your sister to Debs? Many things that go with the guard. But it's a desire, sometimes affable, but sometimes to see the connection. So for those who've done well in business, those who've played a part, and so many of them are here in this room today, their absolute desire to give back, not just to the vulnerable, but also to the very best, promoting what it is to be Irish. Our wonderful music, our literature, our sport. I have never been at such a fancy reception with so many GAgers. I can only imagine this is what Coppers looks like sometimes, without perhaps the chandeliers. But to our fabulous Gaels who are travelling to Waterford for the Global Games, is there anything more amazing to see people, Irish people, people who kind of feel like they want to be Irish, coming together to enjoy our Indigenous Games in amazing water from all four corners of the world, competing on the pitch and then being able to enjoy all the aspects of the other. Having the Irish global nation come together. And these are the essences that have fed into this diaspora strategy. A diaspora strategy that is the product of not just 23 in-person consultations in 17 countries around the world. I didn't do them all, for anyone clocking my carbon footprint. It's not great, but other people did it as well. We also appreciate had 10,000 submissions for the first ever survey of the Irish nation more broadly. And we are a nation. We're not a people who define ourselves in name, in creed, in religion, in colour, or indeed in location. Because wherever you are in the world, if you're a part of the Irish nation, you are of us. You are part of us. And you have a great opportunity to be part of this diaspora strategy. And at the forefront of this diaspora strategy in Canada, where we launch it here this evening, are the amazing collection of people who give so much back to what it is to be Irish. Pretty much all of you are in this room, and there's many more dotted around this ridiculously big country in terms of geographic terms. And I'm so grateful for all of you, for everything you do. But harnessing that and providing, in some cases, the secretariat or the coordination for Russia and the Irish government is our amazing team of diplomats and local staff, not just here in the embassy in Ottawa, but also in our consulates in Vancouver and Toronto, and our team of amazing honorary consuls across the country. I'll conclude on this point. When you speak about the Irish abroad, unfortunately so many people who find themselves abroad only find themselves engaging with the arms of the Irish government when perhaps it's not an easy phone call. You need to get home. There's been an accident. I'm in trouble. Who do I turn to? And the ambassador leads an amazing team here who are first and foremost there to care for the vulnerable and those who need, regardless of how long they've been here. And it is never lost on me how amazing we have in terms of teams of diplomats across 107 different missions who consistently work for Ireland on a daily basis. And I'm so grateful for everything they do, and Ambassador, I'm so grateful for you for bringing together an amazing crowd of people who have put up with my rambling nonsense as the room gets warmer and warmer and warmer. But to conclude, finally, with two very final last hours of oration. Sincerely, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all so much. Gramagas Galair, have a wonderful evening.
Yeah, I have to say, I think that is an absolutely superb articulation of how important our diaspora is. I could ask everybody just to give it one more big round of applause for the future. By the way, the minister and his team flew into Montreal yesterday. He launched the International Sports Diplomacy Strategy. He's spoken at the Montreal Conference. He's met multiple ministers. He's been on the road non-stop. He's been in Parliament. He's done media interviews. He's going to Toronto tomorrow. He's bringing his team with him. We're really grateful that they decided we're going to launch one event to launch the diaspora strategy in Canada, not across Canada, and they picked the nation's capital. And thank you all for coming. It's really brilliant to be here, Minister. Thank you so much. And you know, the minister mentioned team, and it's a great team that he had brought with him, and we're very delighted to have a brilliant team here. We have Jenny, we've Elizabeth, we've Breda, we've Angus, we've Anna, we've Francis, we've all of the team, we've Jennifer, and all. By the way, Breda and Jennifer, minister, during the day are visa officers, and during the evening are sort of running these events. So everyone's on the team, but our team is a team of teams here in Canada and Ottawa, and we are delighted to wrap up this evening with one of our great parts of our team, which is the fabulous Rose of Tralee, have come, and they came and sang for the Prime Minister. He was blown away. He was so impressed that he said he's going to have a gala for the Taoiseach. He said, can you please ask these amazing singers to sing? Unfortunately, as we know, as Macmillan said, Speaker, Vince Dear Boy, and it didn't work out, but he will be coming back. But we are delighted to finish this evening with a very special rendition from the Rose of Tralee. Gairmila Mahalgat, Rose of
All of all the money that e'er I spent it in good company. And all the harm that e'er
make